it's me, Richie T, here. Time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode 80, wherein we talk to Jeff Parkin. He's with BYU TV, and we do it on location. We actually did it in Provo, the heart of BYU. So make sure you stick around for the second and third block here of The Cultural Hall. Got a couple of emails that I want to share on the start of this. The first one is positive, and the second one is one that's negative, but it lets us know that we've arrived. So here we go. First email. This is from Emily. She says, Richie, my parents went and saw you at Desert Star, which is the place I do theater here in Salt Lake. Actually, they have season tickets, but they never catch your shows for some reason. They said it was very good. Thank you very much, Emily. And then she goes on to say, I've been listening to The Cultural Hall on a regular basis, and I must say that I enjoy your articles of news. With the panels, they seem to be very enjoyable. It's like what I hoped that This Week in Mormons, another podcast that is out there that isn't very good. She says, it's like what I hoped This Week in Mormons would be, but it isn't. If you ever want to know about what the church is like or lack thereof of church in Bangladesh, let me know. Emily, I will reach out to you as far as that goes, but thank you for the kind words and props like that. Certainly, Emily, you could go to iTunes, one of the places where you can download this podcast, and you could leave a review of this podcast. Anytime people leave reviews, it kind of ups our stake on iTunes. So when people go and search Mormon podcasts, it increases our SEO, blah, something, something, something technical. It makes it so people find us first. The bigger we get, the bigger people we can get on here, and that helps. So go there and drop a review, if you wouldn't mind. If you hate this thing, don't bother dropping a review. You can keep that to yourself. So that's an email from Emily. And then this email, this is cool. This is from Lila Deshawn Bowes. And goes as follows. This is how we know we've arrived as a podcast, as a show, as a media entity. Says, hi. Hi, Lila Deshawn. Says, you used my photo for the teaser on Parker Jacobs with no credit or any attempt to let me know that you wanted to use it. It's an all rights reserved. Please switch it out for another photo. Check that out. We're getting recognized by people saying, hey, you can't use our photo. Right? They're saying, hey, you know what? You can't have that. And so for that, I'm excited. It means that we've arrived. People are starting to take notice and saying, hey, you know what, pal? You can't do anything with that. You can't have that. A lot of stuff that's going on right now at theculturalhall.com. In addition to having to switch out that photo, check it out. The other day, I posted an interview with the elder who taught Jody Arias. That's the woman that is on trial for killing someone down in Arizona. We talked with the elder who taught her on his mission. Also, there's a lot of great blogs going on. We have a new blogger who is talking about all things mid-single adultish and being adult and, you know, being able to make responsible choices and the appearance of evil and all that. Really good. You can check out that thread of blogs. We've always got the... we've got Carmel, who does our recipes. You can check that out at theculturalhall.com. She is an amazing, amazing recipe specialist and chef and cook and whatever you want to call it. She is winning massive amounts of awards across the nation and really across the world with some of these recipes. And because of how it works that she has to be not a professional, we get them here on The Cultural Hall. So, because otherwise, if she makes money, then she's a professional, and then she can't enter these contests anymore. So she said, hey, I'll share the recipes with you. So check them out. A lot of them are delicious. They're not necessarily fat-free, but they're delicious. So check that out. And as always, we're having check-ins from Sister Tobias. She's our missionary out there in Iowa and letting us know. I think she's about halfway, if not maybe a little further, on her mission, telling us how the work is going, and it's always fun to hear from her. We hear from her once a week. Follow us on Twitter. Michael, our tweeter guy, our head tweet master, whatever you would call him, does a great job. Very funny, very topical, lets you know about what's going on at the site, and does some really pretty funny games on our Twitter's not a thing. You can follow us at The Cultural Hall. Carly does an amazing job at our Pinterest page. It's a great way to find different ideas for Family Home Evening and always the episodes that we do at The Cultural Hall. And who am I missing? Oh, all the panelists. I love the panelists that do the episodes with me. It's so great. They do such an amazing job. They don't get paid. I don't get paid. We all just do this because we love it and we love you. So thank you so much for finding The Cultural Hall, for subscribing if that's what you've done, and for sharing it with your friends or your non-member family members. Share it around. We appreciate it a lot. Glad to have you on board. If there's anything that we can do, you can always send an email, richie@theculturalhall.com, or contact us at theculturalhall.com. Ideas and suggestions for guests are always welcome as well. I think that I've made my way through that, thanking everyone. I'd like to thank my family for the time that they put up with me, not being able to spend time with them because I do this thing for all of you, so you better appreciate it. All right, that's it. That'll be done. Coming up in the second and third block, it's Jeff Parkin of BYU TV. Hey, it's me, Richie T here. I want to talk about a very special event going on. It is Peter Breinholt going to be in concert at Layton High School. That's here in Utah. Exact address, 440 North Wasatch Drive, Layton, Utah. It's a big concert that's going on to benefit Whitesides Elementary. You can find online information at whitesidespta.com. Tickets may be purchased in advance there. You can also call 801-837-7833 for details, but it's a huge thing. They're doing all sorts of donations for Whitesides Elementary School. Also, they're going to have a silent auction. And best of all, it's Peter Breinholt. You love Peter Breinholt. You know Peter Breinholt. We've had him here in the Cultural Hall. He's a guy who does our You Can't Lose articles of news and the Cultural Hall outro, the whole thing. It's Peter Breinholt, a really good friend of this show. So if you're in the area, you're around Layton, you want to make the drive, go see Peter Breinholt Friday, April 12th. At the Layton High School Auditorium.
It's time for the second and third block of the Cultural Hall, where we'll be visiting with Jeffrey Parkin. But to take this moment, and first of all, from here on out, I'll call him Jeff, because I can tell that makes him uncomfortable.
That's all right. You're not my mom.
Yeah. What's your middle name?
Just an initial, L.
L? Awesome.
Jeffrey L. Parkin. Set me up for GA-hood.
Yeah, apostleship. Aspire for the velvet chairs, my
Absolutely.
Friend. We're here at the Old Town Grill in downtown Provo, and I just ate, and it was I don't want to say life changing,
no,
but it really was.
It.
The burger that I had. What I like to do when we come out and do these things is say, you know what, you know this place, I'll eat whatever you want to bring me, and I really will. I've never been disappointed. And he said, "Oh, I got something." Like he looked at me with that, "Oh, I get to create." Kind of look. You got a portobello mushroom
on heaven bread. I don't know. It's with arugula and awesome sauce.
And are your fries the most delicious thing?
I think they're
well?
Sprinkled with crack.
It could very well be.
They're really good.
I'm gonna really actually good, let me try do. One of these while yep. we're doing this right here. This is unprofessional, but I'm doing. Oh,
they're so good.
Oh my.
Since we're in Provo, that doesn't count as real
no,
crack.
No. It's righteous crack.
It's moat crack.
I'm sure.
Oh, no, mm-hmm. That is good. That's different than what I thought that was going to be.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but
Parmesan,
it's good.
Maybe?
Maybe.
Delicious.
We should ask.
But what
anyway,
I got
come here
but what I got was a burger, right? Mm-hmm. You need to get a big burger you can get cooked however you want, like it's so it's one of those places. But then on the top, it was blue cheese. Right? So you're thinking, okay, I've had blue cheese on a burger before, Richie. That's not a big deal. But then there was two strips of bacon. They weren't just bacon. They were breaded and deep-fried slices of bacon.
Whoa.
With like a Southwest mayo ranch something on top. And then the underside, grilled and sautéed onions. I'm not going to be able to talk to anyone the rest of the day without them knowing exactly what I ate, but... Check it out. It's on the corner of 300 West and Center Street in downtown Provo. When you're coming down here for the dedication of the Temple Knackle, make a stop.
Or plan when you go it. To your shows at the Covey Center, come here for dinner first, then walk on down.
Or even when you're coming to get your new products that you sell over at the New Ways, right? You stop.
It's New Skin.
New Skin. Is that right close here, too?
Yep. It's just down
New
the
Skin.
Block.
Yeah, get your stuff from New Skin that you're going to sell to everyone in your ward, and then come by here to the Old Town Grill.
That's right.
Now let's get to Jeff, not Jeffrey, Parkin. You know you have a Wikipedia page?
Actually, no. I did not know
wonderful.
That.
Wonderful.
You do, which makes this introduction a lot easier.
That's a little scary. I don't know what it says. I hope it's true.
It says Jeffrey Parkin, first of all, so let's
I'll
start
go fix
with,
that.
Yeah. An associate professor in the Department of Theater and Media Arts. True so far?
True so far. Doing well.
And was appointed as an associate chair of the department in 2009.
Correct.
You received a Bachelor of Arts in Film and Television Production from the School of Cinema Television at the University of Southern California in 1990.
Right.
As well as a BA in English Humanities from USC. In 91, you received a Master of Fine Arts from USC in screenwriting with additional emphasis in directing.
True that.
We're down one paragraph. We got a few more.
Oh, dear.
Before coming to BYU, you worked in L.A. for 15 years as a producer, director, and writer with companies such as Miramax, there's a link, CBS Television, also a link, Orion Pictures, David E. Kelly Productions, Fox Television, Dallas. Okay, anyway, we'll go to the next paragraph.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
He's written, directed, and or produced two full-length feature films. What are those?
Mr. Dung Beetle, okay, which I produced, and another feature called Together Again for the First Time.
Okay.
The Christmas movie, which is on Lifetime every year, and unfortunately is not my edit.
Is not your edit.
Yeah, the cut of the movie is not mine, so I'm a little sad about that. But so we're not going to talk too much about that. Yeah,
right, okay.
But your name is on it.
But my name is on it.
How it got put together.
It's true. Yeah, when you don't put the money in, I'm not too happy about it. I'm a little sad about it, but I try and smile as I say it.
But the script was yours.
I co-wrote the screenplay, and it was based on a play. But the final cut of the movie was not mine.
What do you disagree with it? I don't want to get you in legal trouble,
They restructured
curious.
A lot of it, and they added voiceover, and I think they kind of lost a lot of the dramatic impact. Mm-hmm. But apparently, Lifetime likes it enough to run it every Christmas, and then I get these texts saying, hey, I'm watching your movie, and then I text back and say, yeah, that's not my movie.
Do you get residuals?
I should.
Okay. We're going to move on from that. A number one rated movie of the week for CBS Television? What's that?
It's called Cab to Canada. Starred Haley Joel Osment right before he did The Sixth Sense.
Okay.
So it's kind of cool. And Maureen O'Hara, who, if you know Maureen O'Hara from the 1940s, she was in a lot of John Wayne movies and John Ford pictures and had this amazing star quality about her that is pretty rare.
How'd you get to come to work with her?
She liked the script and was interested in doing it. And so the first time I met her, she was just a super lovely lady. She was, I don't know, probably in her mid 70s at that point. And so we talked and it was great. And then I went and stood back behind the camera. I was one of the producers on the show, and she started to act. And as soon as she did, it was like someone had literally turned on a switch. And she just sort of glowed. And it was amazing. She's in The Parent Trap, Maureen O'Hara, in the original Parent Trap, mm-hmm. plays the mother.
Plays the mother or the bad stepmother?
Not the bad stepmother, the mother.
The mother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
She's great. Gorgeous. Red hair.
So you can keep
green
her
eyes,
away by banging two
Irish.
Sticks together.
Exactly. No, that's the stepmother.
No, that's the stepmother.
Yeah.
Let's go on. Where was the David Ogden Steers worked with Kirby Hayborn.
Kirby, yes.
Guest here in the Cultural Hall. Kirby is someone who had a great deal of faith in the Cultural Hall, so he came on when no one ever had any idea what it was. So a huge thanks to him.
Kirby's one of the most talented actors I've worked with. He's really great.
You hear that, Kirby? There we go. Joey Lawrence, Larissa Olenek, and Haley Joel Osment, who you mentioned. In 2008, you won 3 Telly Awards.
True.
What's a Telly Award?
Telly Award is just kind of an award for commercials or for other kind of online content. They have a lot of different categories.
Cool. You directed a piece called The Nth Sector.
Nth Sector, yeah.
The Nth Sector. Sorry, uh-huh. I didn't know how to pronounce it.
That's all right.
Jeffrey, I didn't know.
Ricky, come
Rick.
On now.
Oh, Rick there Stedman. We go. Which won the religious, spiritual, editing, and entertainment categories. And then we get into some other stuff here, too, which I think is kind of interesting. It says you received an outstanding achievement in drama from the Association for Mormon Letters. What is the Association for Mormon Letters?
It's actually a really cool organization that honors. It's mostly been honoring literature through the years. And so they give an award every year for like best fiction and best nonfiction, short stories, poetry, that kind of thing. And the award that we got was for a show called The Book of Jeremiah, which was a web series. And the name of the award, maybe it's on there, is like for best film web video. They didn't quite know what to call the Book of Jeremiah because it was a web series and it was an early one, and so they were still trying to figure it out, but it was nice to be honored.
And that also, with that same thing, was it named one of 10 honorees for the Webby Awards?
Uh-huh.
Parkin, as it concludes, has been a big part of the web series produced by BYU students Pretty Darn Funny. The point of the series was transmedia storytelling, and the idea has gained popularity since it was added to the curriculum of Parkin's film class in 2008. So as part of a class, you make a web series?
Well, back in 2008, we as the internet was sort of changing, we're looking at ways that different content could be created. We looked at this idea of a web series. It was just when Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog came out, if you've seen that. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun. And so we were looking at telling a story that would be uniquely Mormon, because a lot of people have this idea that you can't tell a Mormon story and have it be engaging for non-Mormons. Mm-hmm. And I have a little bit of a rebellious streak in me, and I thought, well, I don't think that's true. I think what really matters is a character that you can connect to. And we started with that. And so it's a conspiracy thriller about a college freshman who receives this box on his 18th birthday. Mm-hmm. And sort of his whole life changes and bad things happen. And it's all about following the spirit and holding on to our faith. And even when you can't see things, can you still believe them if you feel them? But it's kind of packaged in a genre like Lost or 24, because we wanted to really.
So it doesn't make sense when the episode is over and there's a little clock counting down in the corner. Is
it? No, one of the best things that has happened for us is people have said they had to keep watching. So mm-hmm. each episode is about anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long. So that's been a lot of fun. So we created a class to set this up. And so the first semester we wrote it and created the world and everything. And then the next semester we actually shot it. And cool. And ran it kind of like a TV series where we would release a new episode every week. Mm-hmm. So every Friday, come heck or high water, as we say at BYU, yeah. We had to have that thing done. And it was a great experience for the students. And a lot of students have gone on because of that to have careers doing things that are kind of in line with that experience for them.
So let's talk about, because I want to get into this now before we get sidetracked into some of your other life stuff. Let's talk about the Mormon film genre.
Yeah.
We've had several of the people that have been involved with that here in the Cultural Hall. We visited with Richard Dutcher, who a lot of people deem to be the grandfather of Mormon cinema. Kirby Hayborn, who has been in every single Mormon yeah. genre film ever created.
Darren Tufts,
who also does film but doesn't necessarily keep into a Mormon genre yeah. as well. And I've kind of had a discussion around that. What is your thought feeling about Mormon cinema?
I think Mormon cinema is really important because I think one of the things that we've done, I think you've seen this with Richard, sometimes the way that we have this sort of weird love-hate relationship with ourselves, and sometimes it's almost, I think, a sense of self-loathing, where we like who we are generally, but we don't want to have anyone else know who we are. And so we like to sort of keep things insular. As soon as any aspect of our culture gets put out there, we become very, very quickly embarrassed. And yet, when you look at other kinds of cinema, for any kind of minority group, those groups own who they are. And for a missionary church, I think it's a little ironic that we do have a problem owning who we are sometimes.
Why do you think it is?
I think part of it is we have a persecution complex. I think that, you know, we've been persecuted for a lot of years, and I think a lot of us thought maybe that was gone, and then after the presidential election, I think we said, at least I did, I read a lot of articles that just had so many inaccuracies, and it felt to me like Mormons were still kind of okay, you know, to be a target, that I think we feel nervous about that, and because our faith is so important to us, we can feel, I think, scared to kind of put it out there because we don't want to be attacked. And you know, obviously now no one's burning our farms down and that kind of stuff. But there's still a lot of unkind things that get said. And so because of that, I think we have a tendency to come into when we're trying to tell our own stories and be very, very nervous about it. With the web series, The Book of Jeremiah, that we made, the criticisms that we got came from the Mormons, not the non-Mormons. Mm-hmm. And
like what kind of criticism?
People would say things like, oh, this is really cheesy, which is kind of one of the big things that just Mormon film in general will get. And we wanted these students to speak like real Mormon kind of BYU students. It takes place at BYU, although we never say that it's BYU, but mm-hmm. it's a place that looks
but the big Y
a
on
lot
the mountain
like it.
Goes, ah, I'm not
yeah,
sure
what
where
is
that?
Is. Yeah.
Cosmo walks by.
Yeah.
Who's
hey, what's
that?
Up, Cosmo?
That's a wolf. So we tried to own our Mormonism, and one of those things was owning the doctrine. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we forget about how powerful and important our doctrine is, and how life-changing it is, and how unique it is. And I think sometimes if we would just own it and say, absolutely, yeah, that's what we believe. We do believe that we can become like our Heavenly Father, which makes sense because we're His children. Wait.
So you mean to tell me?
And yes,
that's what you get.
I do.
That's what you get from people. You mean to tell me you can become a god? Yeah. Uh
huh. That's what I said.
Yeah, and then that's where you either get really confrontational, or people go crazy. I guess crazy.
And maybe some people go, "Whoa, that's pretty cool."
Yeah.
And so what we found is, as we just really owned the doctrine, the story of this young man who has these really sort of hard things happen to him, I think became really much more engaging for people. And non-Mormons really, really responded to it.
New York Times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Jenny.
Leading the guest.
Yeah, lead along if you're going there.
uh-huh. You're welcome.
New York Times gave a great review. I mean, it was really interesting because this was in June of 2009, and I was actually down in Los Angeles at the time, and a student sent me a text and said, did you see that the New York Times has reviewed the Book of Jeremiah? And it was just at the same time that Prop 8 was going on, and I just thought, oh crap, we're in deep trouble, because we've made this show, we flew a little bit under the radar, and all of a sudden we got this review, and I just thought, oh no. And so it starts out by saying something like, you know, a show that calls itself a Mormon conspiracy thriller. Anyone that thinks that you can say that without a smile, you are mistaking yourself, because this is essentially a really great show. And it just, I mean, we could not have had a publicist write something better. Mm-hmm. It just, I mean, the woman who is not LDS and probably one of our Jewish sisters based on just her name, just gave this really rave review, and she understood everything that was going on. She said, even though you have to stop sometimes to Google things like the Iron Rod and FHE, mm-hmm. so essentially she's doing her own missionary work, mm-hmm. She said, "It's you completely get it, and you understand that these guys talk the way that Mormons talk, but it's really engaging, and it was funny and smart, and you know, blah, blah, blah," which was cool.
So even you yourself had a little bit of the persecution complex with that. Sounds like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point. I think that was my expectation, is that, you know, if we went out there, I thought, and especially because it was the New York Times, and with Prop 8, Mormons were just not, you know, we weren't on the top of anybody's love
list. I'm not familiar with this
Prop
8. What thing? What is
it? It was a thing.
Did that happen?
Look it up on Wikipedia.
Is that something in the church?
It's in there.
I don't think there's anything available about
the
LDS
happy church. Time for our California brothers and sisters. So I think what we found was that the non-Mormon or the Mormons felt really nervous about stuff. And in the very first episode, I made sure that we had a line that was just so Mormon that I knew that for a lot of people they would see it and they would go, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe that." And that was okay.
What was the line?
The line was, essentially what happens is Jeremiah is with his parents at BYU. They've come to visit him to take him down to a family reunion in Manti.
That's the line.
Right? there you go. And there's all kinds of really cool things just sort of historically that have happened in Manti, and a lot of really interesting folklore. And so much of the story's sort of based around those ideas. But they give him a video camera, and he keeps filming his parents, and they keep telling him to turn it off. And one of the things about Jeremiah is he's always had these promptings the whole time growing up, and he's always, you know, followed them. So he keeps filming his parents, and his dad finally turns around and he says, you know, "Jeremiah, the Holy Ghost is not going to tell you to film somebody walking into a building." And a lot of people go, "Oh, blah, blah, blah." But the fact is, I think sometimes the Holy Ghost will tell us to film people walking into a building. And our
dad will certainly say that to us.
And our dad will say that. I mean, at least that's, you know, that's what my parents would probably say if they're listening to this. Love you. But what happens in two episodes after that, you actually, if you think about it, understand why it is that he was told to film his parents walking into a building. Hmm. So over and over again in the story, there are things that happen where Jeremiah gets promptings, and it might initially feel like it's not It's a little off kilter. And then he has to decide, am I going to follow the promptings or not? And then when he does, you know, the things happen that happen when we follow promptings, which are good things. They're not always easy things, but they're good things.
With your work at BYU, I know that just in the last couple of years, BYU has had a lot of amazing opportunities. One is that huge communications building, the brand new state-of-the-art. Everything is fantastic within there as far as TV and everything like that, all that equipment. But then also the opportunity with BYU TV, with you know, with everything, with them being independent, they've picked up a lot of sports things and stuff like that. Are you involved in a lot of the BYU TV stuff?
I've helped create some shows for them. I was instrumental with another guy that I work with, Jared Carden, in helping create Studio C, which is their comedy show, which is airing right now. Mm-hmm. And it has members of the former Divine Comedy troupe. And also produced a show called Backstage BYU, which is about four little documentary pieces about kind of behind the scenes at BYU.
Like what?
Behind
like
the scenes of the creamery. This is where how we get caffeine out of Coke. And yeah. No.
And boil
not
down.
Anymore.
Boil it down and then mix in some vinegar and light it on fire. And it burns out.
But it never all the way burns out.
It never all the way burns out.
That's good.
And so things like behind the scenes of the people that clean up all the trash after the stadium.
Oh, cool.
You know, after a big football game and the marching band. And it's really a great show. You can see it on online.
Where at?
It's on the BYU TV site. Mm. And it's called Backstage BYU.
Cool. What about The District? That's something that are you familiar with that show on BYU TV?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, because
yeah.
I think that's kind of a bizarre thing. For people who don't know, we have talked about it here in the Cultural Hall with our articles of news, which we do on Mondays. But it and correct me on any of this if I'm wrong, it's essentially a reality show for a mission district in San Diego, California.
Right, yeah. And the guy that directed it is a friend of mine, Michael Buster, who did just, I think, a really awesome job. And as I understand it, the footage originally came from footage that they were doing to that they would use at the MTC for Preach My Gospel.
Okay.
And sort of kind of helping to train missionaries in you know, working through problems, resolving concerns, that kind of thing. And then I don't know exactly who pitched to BYU TV this idea of it being a show. But they went back in and kind of reconfigured and recut and everything. And I think they ended up with, like, I want to say 6 or 8 total episodes. I haven't seen all of them, but I think it's really compelling. There are, I think, at least 2 other missionary kind of reality shows that are also in progress. It's I think, a big step for the church to be willing to kind of put that out there. And these other 2 shows, as I understand, are struggling a little bit in terms of just finding people that feel comfortable with what we can depict. And I think, again, this kind of goes back to this idea of feeling nervous about what people are going to think about us.
So you think, that it's based on what people are comfortable. I guess that's true, right? Because my feeling is with a lot of stuff, even like this podcast, for example, I think that there are a lot of people who really enjoy it. But then there are some things where I'm like, are people going to enjoy this, or is this going to be something that's uncomfortable and they don't want to talk about it, and they turn it off and they don't ever get it again? It's interesting how we can't just within the church, like, it has to, like, stakes are so high for us that it can't just be like, oh, that was a thing. We did that. That was a thing. And now we've moved on from that thing, recently in the news with the wearing pants to church. It can just be a thing, but it seems like everything, and maybe it stems again. I love this idea of the persecution complex, but the everything is so deep that everything is the highest stakes, and we just have to, no, you don't understand. No, we have to fight back now, instead of just being like, it's okay. That was a thing. And for those people, that was a thing, but it's not my thing.
I love that that's how you're looking at it, because I completely agree. There's a lecture that I give to my students where I teach a writing class, and I talk about this idea of Picasso and how many works of art he created, and it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000. Hmm. There are at least 4 museums just dedicated to Picasso in the world.
Oh my gosh.
And the thing about Picasso that's so amazing, if you've gone to any of these museums, I went to the Picasso Museum in Barcelona, is it's like 3 or 4 stories of Picasso stuff. Paintings, etchings, ceramics, sculptures, tapestries, rugs, and the guy just created. He just did. And you know what? If he made something and it kind of sucked, oh, well, it turns out there's another piece of paper right under this one.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to do that, you know? And that's how he turned into Picasso. Is I think he had a real understanding, and I think is doctrinal, of this idea of a probationary state. And that's the whole thing that we're here for, is to try stuff and make mistakes and, oh, there's a thing. I kind of screwed up. Well, okay, thank goodness for the atonement. I'm going to give it another shot and I'll try it again. And I think sometimes when we, and I think sometimes we do this to our kids, we just put so much on them that they think, I can't do that. I can't be that. And so this idea of sometimes saying, you know, I like how you say that. That was a thing. And we make a show and it's about the missionaries and maybe it doesn't totally work. But you know what? There can be lots of really great things and we can learn some stuff. And, you know, if Hollywood knew how to do everything right, we would have no flops.
Right.
But no one has figured out how to do that. And the only way to figure out what works is just to keep doing, you know?
Coming back in just a minute, I have an idea for a TV show that I want to pitch to you from one of the listeners here at the Cultural Hall. So that's coming back in just a minute here on the Cultural Hall. I already said that. Why did I say that again?
It's all right.
Let's eat some more.
We know where you are.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, and again, from the Old Town Grill in Provo.
Get yourself some fries.
Did you? Oh, yeah, you pounded those suckers out. No. Look at that.
They're so good. There's like 5 left.
It's me, Richie, and Molly has joined me here. Molly
Hello.
Mormon. And hey. And our next guest has arrived, too.
Hello.
We like to get these done. This is like tithing settlement of interviews. You know what I'm saying? Line them up. All right, I promised you this. This is an email from Stuart, who listens to the Cultural Hall. And I, even if it's not a real thing, I would like to work with you on a one-time, this is a reality show that the Mormons have done. So what I'm claiming right now is artistic license that we can share, but I'm not giving this to you.
All right,
I know how you TV people are, where it's like, here's an idea that I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I should say, I may be working on an idea very similar to this. So
with enough,
this is how the Hollywood studios work, and I'm just telling you. So go ahead.
He already had that idea.
I may have already had it.
I've got this documented in print and time stamped on this little podcast here. All right, says Richie, love the podcast. I'm a convert, which means he hasn't listened to every single episode of the Cultural Hall. Otherwise, he'd be a lifer. Says I don't miss an episode. I've been thinking for a while that someone needs to start an LDS reality TV show, and you, Richie, are the man to do it. There already is one, so he goes on. He says, it'd be sort of like American Gladiators, but the events would revolve around setting up chairs, rolling out tables, using the little carpet sweepers to sweep up Cheerios. I'm struggling for a name, he says. Maybe the Elder's Quorum Challenge or Shoulder Through the Wheel. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure the panel could come up with a better name and maybe some even better events. Anyway, keep up the work. From Zion North, he says, which is Raymond, Alberta, Canada, Stewart. I think it'd be a great spoof video. Maybe not a full show.
It could be funny. I don't know. I would call it maybe Works Not Grace.
There you go. See, look
or,
at that.
You know,
is that what your show that was similar to this?
No, I didn't have one. I'm not this smart. This is, you know, Stuart's way smarter than I am. So, yeah. I'd probably watch it, though. And sure. Then I would think it's too much like my own life, and so I'm not gonna watch any more of this.
I do this already.
It's too close.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned in the break there was something you wanted to get to. I'm not very good at segues. Let's just get to the thing.
There you go.
Cut
to the chase.
And then we'll get back to it.
I just want to say one other thing about Mormon cinema, which is I think it is really important that we respond charitably to Mormon cinema as a people. And I think it's one of the things that the filmmakers that I know that have made movies that are specifically LDS in nature, it's been a really hard thing for them. You'll hear Richard Dutcher talk about it. You'll hear the Hailstorm guys talk about it. And sort of people who are unkind about their work. And I think what that does, it actually stunts our growth artistically. Because if there's a really great LDS story that somebody wants to tell, they are going to feel too afraid to tell it because, oh, everyone's going to make fun of me. Everyone's going to say it's cheesy. And it's interesting teaching writing at BYU is when a student will say, oh, I've got this one story that I really, really want to tell. And if you can get them in a place where they feel safe, frequently there's some kind of a spiritual component to it. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, things that people really care about. And yet I think we sometimes set up an environment where we're never really going to get to that place where we can tell really, really great stories where Mormon beliefs and the gospel are just sort of an inherent part of that story because we continue to not allow artists to fail. And so that's my little soapbox on that, is that we got to go through some kind of awkward teenage phases, and that's okay. We still love our teenagers.
What do you think about as far as writing and the creative process goes? I know a lot of people would say teaching film or writing at BYU would be really hard and frustrating because they feel like the creativity has to be, it knows no bounds. And I would think that, and maybe this is my naivety, that at BYU, there are some bounds as to things that would be appropriate to be able to put together and write. So how does that, where's the balance there? Or is there a balance?
That's a great question. It can be hard sometimes. I mean, I think there are stories that are really powerful stories that deal with themes that I think sometimes at BYU, some people would feel really awkward telling. And mm-hmm. So in terms of me as a teacher, you know, there's kind of the general content stuff that we talk about in terms
like
of
what?
Language,
no
you
swears?
Know, really specific. I allow a couple of swears.
Not big ones. Not
farm,
not
farm
celestial.
Swears.
Okay, not celestial. We have levels
celestial
of swears.
Celestial swears.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I would reverse those somehow, whatever the upside down
celestial swears
is.
Are,
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No queen mothers, stuff like that,
yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh.
So just the farm ones, and there's really just kind of two of those, I think. And,
yeah.
And
ones.
You can't go over the top on that. But also thematically, you know.
But is it hard? Because as a student, especially in that age when you want to push bounds and you're trying to discover who yourself is it like, well, that is a great idea, student. And something that you should experience and express not within this? Is that kind of how
I've
you go
said
about
pretty
it?
Much exactly those things before, yeah. You know. And I get that, you know. And we're BYU is funded by tithe payers. And I think we have, you know, I think there's expectations there. And I think we owe it to the tithe payers to try and create things that they can feel good about. And then, of course, I think when you graduate, you can look at lots of other kinds of things. But I think in the big picture, you also need to be sensitive about the kinds of things that the stories that you're telling and the impact that's going to have on people.
What's the greatest thing you've ever done?
The greatest thing
yeah.
I've ever
What's
done?
What's the greatest thing you've ever done? Die. You die right now. Boom. Tree falls into the Old Town Grill and you die for whatever reason. The greatest thing that Jeff ever did.
doing this interview.
Now, come on.
No, I would say
those French fries.
It's exactly. Like, you know, it's the same. It's the stuff. You know, I married a really great girl who's really, really fantastic, and I have three really great kids. That's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Aww.
Now, if they weren't listening, what's the greatest thing that you?
I'd still say the same thing. I know.
But okay, so then let's take it to that step. Then, aside from, you know, that your favorite book is the Book of Mormon, and that your family is the your greatest
like
accomplishment
book.
Of your entire life.
Kidding.
What? Just kidding, Bish.
Just kidding, President Samuelson.
No, what would be your greatest accomplishment? Now, you can't family stuff. Let's.
Yeah.
Professionally?
Yeah. Or, I mean, it could be something else. Like, I hiked to the top of something. But I just greatest accomplishment that isn't the Sunday school answers of greatest accomplishment.
I think, man, I with all due respect, those greatest questions are hard for me. Mm-hmm. I think making a movie is a really, really hard thing. And I guess things that are great for me are things that were also difficult. And I've made a couple of features that that I'm really proud of for lots of reasons. I mean, part of it is for the product or what the product could be, but also things that happen through the course of that process, things that in working with other people and in those relationships and things that you learn about yourself in the process. I love when I'm writing and characters begin to speak. And you're thinking, whoa, that was a good one. And you sort of realize that didn't really come from you. And it's a really happy, fulfilling, satisfying, educational, illuminating kind of a thing. So maybe creating. How about that? That's one of the greatest things I do.
It's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask him another question.
I was going to reiterate what you said then. I think it's worth repeating. You said that the things that are you find to be worth the most while are the things that are the hardest, and I think that's why things like family come to mind automatically, because that's hard work.
It's really hard work, and it I've got a 21-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 13-year-old, and sometimes you think you maybe have it a little bit figured out. Turns out you don't. But it also, it's really great when there are these fun, unexpected things that happen, you know, even when it's a school night and you're all sitting around, like last night at our house reading "Twas the Night Before Christmas," and, you know, the fire's going and everyone really should be in bed, but nobody is. And those little things sneak up on you. And it's pretty great.
Great. Let's say you are the boss of the future of Mormon cinema. Where is it going?
Where would I take it, or where do I think it's going?
Maybe Ooh. Both, maybe.
Yeah, both.
Okay, so.
Both with an L, by the way. Did you notice both. How we both said that?
Both. That was good. Good.
I heard you.
I said both.
Play back the tape.
All right, I will. Stop, rewind.
So both of those, where would I take it? I would take it somewhere where we're not afraid to tell our story. I think you can tell stories that will be engaging to people who are not LDS. Let's say you're going to tell the Joseph Smith story. I think one of the things that's the most fascinating about that story is you have a kid. He's 14 years old. He says he goes out in the woods and he says God and Jesus appear to him. That's a pretty crazy claim. And I know when I was a missionary, sometimes you're teaching and then you get to the, you know, third discussion. This was back in the day. And so it's like, yeah, we have God the Father and Jesus Christ that showed up. Oh, and then it turns out there was John the Baptist. Oh, and don't forget about Peter, James, and John. Oh, and there was this Moroni dude. And it's sort of, oh, and then some guys showed up in the Kirtland Temple. You know, it's really cool stuff, and it's also sort of really unbelievable in a way. Mm-hmm. But Joseph Smith never faltered. He never said, okay, you got me, you're tarring and feathering me, so I'm gonna give up and tell you, guess what, that actually really didn't happen. I was smoking peyote or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if
licked
they had
a
that
salamander.
Then there, right, I licked a brown salamander. And so he that's a really interesting story. I think it'd be an interesting story to see that happen and never go into the grove. And as a viewer, you never know whether or not that actually happened. Hmm. But that idea of somebody who stays absolutely true to something that they believe in the way that, like in A Man for All Seasons, somebody's just absolutely true to something, even if we don't necessarily agree with that. I'm not a Catholic, but that's the story of Sir Thomas More. And so I think I would really like to see us tell some of our stories in the way that we just own them and allow the characters to speak and be who they were. I think, you know, there's some touchy subjects, but I actually bring up salamanders. I think the Mark Hoffman story is an amazing story because of what it says about faith. What does it require? What's required to believe? You know, do we need to see things? What happens if we see things that don't match up with our beliefs? And I was a missionary when that all happened, and when all of these forgeries started coming out and people had left the church. What do you do with that? You know, are you humble enough to say, you know what, I jumped to conclusions? Or maybe you say, oh, well, it was not right anyway, and so you walk away. So I'd love to see us tackle some harder things. I think Mountain Meadows is a really interesting story, you know, and I think there are powerful themes there that are universal.
Which one are you doing? Which one are you going to take?
Well, while I'm teaching at BYU, I don't know which of those I will be doing. But sometimes I'm making them in my brain, and maybe that's okay.
Do you sometimes feel like you have to watch what you do? I mean, you made a joke earlier, and then you said, oh, just kidding, President Samuelson. Do you feel like it's like that? Because I think...
I actually don't. I mean, I think people are aware of it. And I think they need to be, you know. I think that's like I said, that, you know, tithe payers are funding tuition there, and so I think we have an obligation there. But I feel like people have been very, very supportive, and you know, if you make a misstep, I feel like by and large people are really willing to work with you. I think a lot of it kind of is sort of where your heart is as well, and what you're trying to do. So
it's interesting. In the past, we had Kendall Wilcox, who was a professor at BYU for a while.
Kendall's great, yeah.
And had the opportunity to visit him, and he's no longer a professor at BYU. And to hear how, you know, where he ended up not working there was the better experience for him, but to hear kind of this, as he felt some of the frustration of being there on campus, I guess it's an interesting thing that you don't really know until you get there. What it would be like, and how you personally would deal with that.
Yeah, and my sense with Kendall, and I could be wrong here, but in the couple of times we've talked, and you know, I've heard him as well, is I think there are some other pieces there that weren't specific to teaching that were part of sort of the what the other side of that.
I don't know. It's just such an interesting topic for me because as I talk with different people, and we've had various people on who are, you know, firm believers, but for whatever reason have stopped attending church and stuff like that. To me, I just go, no, the church needs you to remain here and be an opposing voice.
Exactly.
With respect. Yep. Be an opposing voice, because otherwise it's a homogenized one thing, and then there's going to be someone else who's going to need someone else to line up with them, and there's not anyone there because you bailed.
I totally agree with that.
Yep.
And you know, I think the thing is too about BYU, I started my education at BYU, and I went for a little over a year, and then I transferred to USC because it just wasn't a good fit for me at that point. And of all the places I think I would have expected to end up, BYU was not even on that list. And so the fact that we're here, I feel like the Lord really kind of kicked us here, probably more for me to be humbled than anything I would bring to BYU. But
How did it work that you ended up at BYU?
There were sort of a lot of really great things were happening in LA, and all of a sudden these doors just all started closing. And I thought, oh no, what is going on? And I finally kind of, you know, got to this place where I kept basically in the back of my mind hearing a voice that you're supposed to call BYU. And I just thought I'd rather die. honestly what I thought, you know.
Yep.
And I just thought there couldn't be anything worse than living in Provo, Utah and teaching at BYU. Mm-hmm. And we looked at houses finally so I made a phone call and called a friend, and I said, do not tell anyone I am calling you to find out if there's a position in the film program open. And then I got a call back the next day saying, we just posted the job yesterday. It was sort of thing after thing like that. And then when we came and started looking for houses, we looked in a lot of places, but we were not going to look in Provo or Orem.
Mm-hmm.
And did not feel good about anything, and walked into this house built in the 1970s. We live in Pasadena, California. This house built in 1908, gorgeous, really cool wraparound porch, Victorian craftsman transitional, you know, blah, blah, blah. And now we live in a house built in 1978 with vinyl siding.
Yeah.
Right? But we walked into that house and it was like, nope, we are supposed to live here. And so, and people keep saying to me, you know, how's that humble pie, Parkin? And you know what? It's actually pretty good, because I think the Lord takes care of us if we just, you know, even if he has to push us into the corner a little bit.
My mind goes to the interview with BYU, and they're like, Brother Parkin, we've been waiting for you. And he goes, I don't have the pleasure of your name. And he's like, I came to you in a dream.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Nothing. What? Nothing.
What? You don't enjoy the parables of Newell K. Whitney and Joseph Smith? Fine. I'll leave it out.
I like that parable. I actually feel like something like that happened.
But that's cool to hear how it all fell into place, and that's how. And
yeah,
that's
it was really cool. And so now I kind of don't know. We'll stay here as long as we're supposed to stay here.
So that you answered where you'd like to see it go. Where do you think it's going, Mormon cinema?
Right now, I think it's in a place that's a little bit sad.
Tell
and
me.
I think because we've sort of beat it there, you know, and I think that there's not very much happening. And I think it's going to take some years to go by for people to feel like they are willing to start telling Mormon stories again. And if we aren't willing to receive that work, it is just so much work to make a movie. And when you put your guts into something and then you feel like people make fun of you and all of that, it's just too hard. It's like, why would I want to do that again? And I think, you know, so what I would hope would happen is that people will receive films that are by and about Mormons more charitably than we have in the past. And that would enable us to feel sort of more and more able to tell our own story, because right now everyone else is telling our story but us.
That's a wonderful invitation, because we need to be on each other's side about this.
It's interesting for me, too, as I think about the future of Mormon film. I need to find out what happens to Nephi. I saw that first Book of Mormon movie, you know, that was so awesome.
There's a book. And I heard there's a musical.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's the same story,
I don't
though.
Think it's the same story.
No,
but
I'm just saying.
But I watched that first Book of Mormon movie, and I need to find out what happens to Nephi, because where I left... That
there you go.
That movie, I like that movie.
You know what? Here's the thing: is I think that the you know people can say whatever, but I think it was made with good hearts,
with the purest intention.
Yeah,
absolutely. That is one thing I would never dispute. But as I watched it, I went, maybe we should slow down a little bit, everyone. There.
We should say, great job. Let's work together to make something that I would rather watch.
Or let's try it again. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like if you get somebody. I remember when I was going to USC, we had a student who had been inactive for a lot of years, and little by little she started coming back to church, and you know, she was really internalizing the gospel. It was really making a difference for her, and she stood up to bear testimony one Sunday, and this story always makes me get a little emotional, but she stands up and she says, I'm just so happy to be here, and thank you to all of you for everything that you've done. And she kind of stopped and stood there, and then finally she goes, oh, shh. And she says the whole word. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was so amazing about it, I mean, and you can imagine hearing somebody say that from the pulpit. That's like, whoa.
Yep.
But nobody was mean or judgmental or harsh. And it was just like, we are so glad you're here. And that's what matters.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Let's ask you this. Do you have a calling right now?
I do.
What is it?
I am the Deacon's Quorum Advisor and the Young Men's Second Counselor,
bless
Young Men's President.
You.
You know what? I am blessed. It is a great job.
I love it.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic.
Can you give me tips? Because I'm Sunday school for the 12 and 13 year olds starting this next year.
Our ward is a great ward. But one of the things our ward does is I think people are running like bakeries and candy shops and stuff, because they come out of Sunday school and like one Sunday, I kid you not, they had banana splits. Awesome. Ice cream, bananas, chocolate sauce, and they're marching down the hall carrying this stuff. Food seems to work. I finally gave in after about 3 years, and I offer candy to those boys who have read their scriptures every day, because I finally decided,
so smart.
Guess what? I don't really care. If they're spending time in the scriptures, yeah, I'll bribe them. Uh-huh. I'll own it, you know? Because if they feel the spirit... and there's a little bit of conversion that happens. Yeah.
That's worth
whatever
the M&Ms.
Some M&Ms yep. and Jolly Ranchers,
for
you
sure.
know.
For sure.
Anything else? Because I'm petrified. My kid just got 1 year older than that, so I won't be teaching my kid. He's 14, so it's the years younger. And since I just came into being a dad at the age of 12, it's been that whole, I'll be teaching the years of a kid that I had no idea what I was doing just 2 years ago. Please, something.
We'll pray for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, pray a lot. But no, I think just being real with the kids and being honest. I mean, kids know when we're kind of, and I think that's one of the things sometimes with Mormon cinema too, is that if we try to candy coat and sugarcoat stuff and don't acknowledge that there are hard things in life, you know, I mean, we've got some young men in our ward who have some really, really major challenges in their life. And so when you're talking about certain kinds of things, you sometimes just kind of have to acknowledge that they're dealing with, you know, some other kinds of stuff. And I think you got to laugh a lot with them. And, you know, sometimes a stick can be really effective. Just don't hit him in the head.
Read that in the Bible, I think.
Yeah, that's somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, what would you pick?
Yeah, this is one of those things that I'm just going to say what I'm going to say, and you'll probably not like it, but I just like the callings the Lord picks for me. Sorry,
that's
but there it is. I got picked to be the choir director once, and I would have thought I would have expected to be the Relief Society president before that.
Really?
And it was the most awesome. I was so afraid.
He's
and
artistic.
It was, yeah, I don't know what it was. I had long hair then too, but I just felt so inadequate, and it was the most amazing experience. It was really cool.
That is so. Cool. So whatever, huh?
I'll take whatever.
Bishop yeah. Parkin. And then
Wrong.
Finally, no. You hear that?
I've stopped saying what I don't want because I always end up getting that stuff. So,
what's your favorite part of your faith?
Favorite part of my faith? I think that depends on where I am in my life. Right now, probably the atonement.
Cool. Tell people where they can find and follow and see and tweet and click and all
you
that
can
stuff.
Learn more about the Book of Jeremiah at Jer3Maya. That's J-E-R, then the number 3. Maya.com, and that's the web series that we made, and that you can actually also buy the whole web series at Deseret Book.
I've never heard of this. What's this? Deseret Book?
Deseret Book, yeah, or Desert Book, as some people say. And Pretty Darn Funny, which is the new web series that we actually made for Deseret Book, and stars Chris Clark, who you will be interviewing. He's laughing back there. And his wife, Lisa, she's actually the star, and very funny, smart, lots of fun, and it's an all-women comedy. That's at prettydarnfunny.com. And the novel for the Book of Jeremiah is coming out in March.
Cool.
And it's called Premonition.
Cool. No Thanks. No Twitter, anything like that that people can find you or follow you?
As I was saying before,
his Twitter account gets hacked all the time.
My Twitter account did get hacked, and someone had to tell me that it got hacked because I made a goal I was going to do it more, and then other stuff, you know, happened. Like
I love
scout
those goals.
Camp.
Those are my favorite.
I know.
I'm going to do this. Oh, I never did do that years later.
Yep.
Oh, I was going
yep.
to.
Yep, yep.
Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And that when the time comes, you will travel home in safety.
And that if you weren't healthy enough to listen to this episode this week, that you'll be healthy to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.